Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On June 25, 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court delivered its decision on the Morse v. Frederick case. The case involved a public high school principal who, pursuant to the school district's policy against displaying messages promoting illegal substances, disciplined a student for displaying a large banner with the slogan, "Bong Hits for Jesus," during the Olympic torch relay, which students had been released from class to attend with some faculty supervision. The court was asked to consider whether the suspension and the school district's policy are unconstitutional on First Amendment grounds. In this episode of SCOTUSCast, the Honorable Ken Starr, Dean and Professor of Law at Pepperdine University and former United States Solicitor General, offers his analysis of the recent decision. Michael Rossman, General Counsel for the Center for Individual Rights, offers his own analysis in another edition of SCOTUSCast. As always, the Federal Society itself takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, the Honorable Ken Starr.
Well, the Supreme Court today handed down its decision in Morse v. Frederick, better known as the Bong Hits for Jesus case. This was the first time in over two decades that the court had had occasion to address student free speech rights. The court famously in Tinker versus the Des Moines School District in the early 1960s and in the context of Vietnam concluded that the students were acting within their constitutional rights in wearing passively dark armbands, protesting silently the nation's efforts in Vietnam. And so the Tinker rule carried through the jurisprudence of the court, through the Bethel case involving Matt Frazier's somewhat racy nomination speech on behalf of one of his friends who was running for school-wide office. The court upheld the right of the school there to punish Matt Frazier for what he had said because of the embarrassing nature of the presentation. And then in the final case in the trilogy prior to today's Bong Hits case, Morse v. Frederick, the court likewise upheld the right and ability of schools to control school-sponsored newspapers, the Hazelwood case or the Kuhlmeier case. There the case involved and publication that was a product or project of the journalism class at the large public high school outside St. Louis. So then the court fell silent for lo these years, and the upshot was that a certain cacophony developed in the law, different strands of opinion, culminating pretty dramatically in the Ninth Circuit's ruling in Morse v. Frederick, the Bong Hits case, that Joseph Frederick, the student at Juno Douglas High School, had the First Amendment guaranteed right to display a banner with the words "Bong Hits for Jesus" at a school-sponsored, school-authorized, during school hours activity, namely welcoming the Olympic torch in a ceremony in Juneau, Alaska, as the torch was wending its way in 2002 for the Winter Olympics to Salt Lake City. So the facts, I think, are pretty well understood that this was a school event. The court today did confirm in a very short part of the analysis that this was as if it occurred on school grounds. It was, in effect, a field trip without having to get on the bus, but it was a school-authorized event during school hours. So we were in the arena of free speech in the context of schools, and so what is the rule that now emerged in light of the prior teachings of the court? Well, if anything, I think the court has really expanded the ambit of free speech rights for students while at the same time upholding the ability of administrators and teachers to control certain forms of particularly dangerous speech, such as speech here celebrating the drug culture, or reasonably interpreted as promoting the drug culture, promoting illegal drug use. But look at the way the court went about its work, and in particular, the very important concurring opinion authored by Justice Alito and joined by a great friend of the First Amendment, Justice Kennedy. When you take the Chief Justice's opinion with the interpretation and the narrowing interpretation of the opinion by Justice Alito, what we see is this. The school board wins here, and Deborah Morse, importantly, the school principal, wins on qualified immunity grounds, and here there was happy and cheerful unanimity on the part of all of the justices. Reasonable minds will differ about the extent of free speech rights generally and certainly in a setting such as schools. But happily, I believe for the law and certainly for education in the United States, the justices were quite emphatic and clear that Deborah Morse, the principal who made the judgment that this banner by Joseph Frederick should come down, should not have to face the prospect of a money damages award, including the prospect of a ruinous personal award against her for punitive damages, a classic example of excess in our civil litigation system. So the court got rid of that issue, which is a very important issue to school administrators around the country and obviously of profound importance personally to Deborah Morse and her family. So that is one issue. But now back to the key and enduringly important issue for the law, First Amendment law. And there, I think what we see is a court that is very pro-First Amendment. It tends to err on the side of protecting free speech as opposed to allowing regulation and indeed censorship of free speech. This, I think, should be viewed as a narrow exception to the general rule or the baseline that freedom of speech does in fact apply to students and that they are at liberty in the school setting to speak, to address their fellow students in a non-disruptive way, and I want to elaborate on that, about issues that may be very sensitive, political issues, the war in Iraq, religious issues. What religious community do I feel comfortable with and to, in fact, engage in an evangelistic kind of message, if that is the desire? So a quotation of scripture would seem to me to be on a T-shirt, would seem to me presumptively protected now. At the same time, the court did recognize, that schools are different, that there is an in loco parentis quality to schools, that parents are entrusting their children to the educational system, and schools therefore need to make these judgments. So how to balance these competing interests, student free speech, freedom of association on the one hand, and then orderliness and control and decorum on the other hand? I think, if anything, today the court has said we're going to strike the balance more in favor of students should have that right to speak and to address these issues that may be very controversial, may be very sensitive, and so forth, and that student speech, presumptively protected, is going to have to then be in the zone of protection and taken out of that zone only if the school can in fact demonstrate, as here, a very clear justification for the suppression or censorship of the speech. So the way I read the opinions taken together, the Chief Justice's opinion and the concurring opinion by Justice Alito joined by Justice Kennedy, is that everyone wins today. Freedom of speech wins in the school setting. There's no cutting back on that as I see it. But at the same time, school administrators enjoy certain discretion in making judgments about certain kinds of messages, limited though that discretion may be, but to keep pro-drug, certainly the use of illegal drugs and the celebration of the drug culture, to keep those messages out of the school environment and to protect the public health and the safety of the children. Now, I do want to make note of Justice Thomas's concurring opinion. It's really a quite remarkable and iconoclastic opinion. Justice Thomas would simply jettison Tinker and do away with it and just essentially permit a very broad discretion to school administrators. It's quite iconoclastic in that it really sets its face against these now decades of law of the Supreme Court of the United States interpreting the First Amendment and in numerous federal courts across the country. So Justice Thomas just says, I disagree. I think Tinker was wrongly decided, and that's the end of that. It raises some very interesting questions in terms of Justice O'Connor's philosophy, Justice Thomas's philosophy and worldview with respect to the role of precedent. But he has now clearly spoken on this in a very detailed and elaborate opinion, which merits, I think, very careful study. The dissenters came to obviously a very different view on the fundamental question of the First Amendment rights of Joseph Frederick, and embraced a very broad and I would say indulgent view of the reach of the First Amendment, even though it was their view that this message was sort of nonsense and the like. Nonetheless, the view of the three dissenters, namely Justices Stevens, Souter and Ginsburg, was very sweepingly pro-First Amendment. So it was a very libertarian and pro-allow a thousand voices to be heard kind of opinion. Did not carry the day, but again, it does tend to show the power and the force of free speech doctrine in the work of this court. So all in all, a very strong statement in favor of free speech rights of students, but that those rights do have limits. The Chief Justice's closing words were really to the effect that one really does have to take into account the difficulty and sensitivity of school administrators' task in a difficult operating environment in the modern public education system, and a certain sympathy and empathy for the decisions that those individuals like Deborah Morse are charged with making. Happily, again, to conclude, the court was emphatic that school administrators who make reasonable judgments should not face the prospects of a money damages award against them. That is a great day for school teachers and school administrators across the country who are operating in what the Chief Justice rightly described as a very difficult environment. Thank you. It was a pleasure to comment on the case, and it was a privilege to be able to represent the Juneau, Alaska School District, Juneau Douglas School District, and Deborah Morse, the school principal, who's a dedicated educator, wonderful public servant, and it's a great day for her in particular. Thank you very much.